diminutive Daredevil's debut, Dynamite!
Yes, the nation has gone Daredevil Brown crazy. People all over America are reading Daredevil Brown comics, drinking Daredevil Brown soda, and buying every Daredevil Brown product from soup to nuts.
I'll give you two Babe Ruths and an autographed Ty Cobb for your Daredevil Brown.
Have you flipped your lid? Nobody gets my Emmett.
One, two, one, two, three, four.
Back to the Future's my favorite thing. Always talk about it and write songs to sing. Even though there was never a part four, Marty McFly is coming back for more.
Come on!
I don't make money, get no fame. Love for these characters is what I blame. Podcast about comics and cartoons and more, cause there's still things to explore in Marchy McFly 4.
It's
Marchy McFly 4.
Can you feel this?
It?
Is my favorite part right here.
Ooh.
That's me being sexy. Wait, yeah. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It's March 13th, which means that it's day 13 of year 4 of Marchy McFly. We're here. We're here again. We're almost at the halfway point. Can you feel it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting here with some seltzer water with lime in it because I'm living it up. And I'm here to talk more Back to the Future. And, you know, after I watched today's episode, I thought, wait, is this show getting better? Or am I getting, like, am I just being, you know, delusional? Am I just so, like, used to what I've been watching that anything that's pretty good is like, whoa, it heightens it. Maybe it's a little bit of both. Maybe they found their stride, you know, late in the first season. I don't know, but I am getting excited about where this show might rank if, or more likely when, I do rank all these episodes to find the greatest Back to the Future animated episode. There's only 26 to choose from, so it'll make it easy. And there are some there that I criticize more than others, so I think it'll make it easy. But dare I say, this episode and the last episode, maybe not so easy. They make it not so easy because there are some I go, am I enjoying this? I think I just downright enjoyed this episode. But I'm not going to waste any more time talking about the episode. Let's get right into it.
Bye.
Okay, let's do it again. Let's sing the song again. Okay, I'm not going to do that again. So this episode is called Gone Fishing. It is the 11th episode of the first season, and it originally aired November 30th, 1991. Now, the fact that this aired November 30th, so they were still putting out new episodes, and the last episode was the Christmas episode. I feel like they should have swapped this, because this episode had nothing to do with the time of the year, had nothing to do with any holiday. It was a fun episode, but nothing like that. No reason why this episode and the other one shouldn't have swapped, so the other one was closer to December. That's all I'm saying. So this one was directed again by Phil Robinson, and the writers were John Ludden, who we've mentioned in the past, and Wayne Katz. I'm not sure if we've mentioned him before. I think this is the first time I looked him up on IMDb. He wrote an episode of Pinky and the Brain. He wrote 13 episodes of the Problem Child animated series. So he's into writing about animated series based on movies. He wrote for Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Okay, see, I'm telling you. The Completely Mental Misadventures of Ed Grimley. So again, not a movie, but a TV character, Martin Short. But he also wrote one episode of Back to the Future, the animated series, this episode we're talking about today. And yeah, he's written for other cartoons, Pound Puppies, The Flintstone Kids, which I used to love, A Pup Named Scooby-Doo, The New Yogi Bear Show. It's a lot of things that have already been, like, that he's written for IPs, shows based on things, except for Pinky and the Brain. But his segment was called Leave It to the Beavers, so even that was based on something else. But that's not what I want to really focus on his IMDb. He also acted. He's acted in a few things. He played the voice of Rob the Master in The Brave Little Toaster. He played the narrator. He was the narrator in the movie Howard's End. That was a pretty big deal. Wasn't that movie with Anthony Hopkins from 1992? He is the narrator of that. And I don't care about that. I don't care about The Brave Little Toaster. What I care about is his role. And it says uncredited. I don't care. He played the role of Senator with Wife. That was the actual name of, at least that's what it's written here on IMDb, in the 1991 art cinema film Cool as Ice, starring Vanilla Ice himself. Yes, this guy was in a movie with Vanilla Ice, and then, at the same time, he's writing Back to the Future cartoons. I mean, talk about living the dream. He turned his life-changing performance in Cool as Ice into a chance to write Back to the Future, the animated series, co-write one episode. I mean, wow. I couldn't do that, so I think that's pretty cool. So as I said, this episode ended. This was the last episode to air in November of 91. And I wonder if they go right through December. I wonder if they just finish out the year, or do they take a break in December and come back in January? You'll have to wait until the next time to find out that the clue to that riddle. So let's jump right into the actual what we see in the episode. It opens up, as it always does, with Dr. Emmett L. Brown. What's he doing? He's in 1920s. I don't know if he's in New York or whatever. He's like, hey, everybody, it's 1920s Doc. He goes, wait a second, it's 1991 Doc, but in 1920s. Really, he's in front of a green screen, and he has he's in black and white. And he talks about meeting Thomas Edison and one of his heroes. He had him sign. They actually have him walk in frame with Thomas Edison, have him sign a light bulb. It says, to Doc, the best, Thomas. And then Doc's talking about the light bulb and accidentally drops it. And he's like, Memo, go back and meet Thomas again and bring more light bulbs. And then he reminisces a little. He's like, the 1920s. They called it the Roaring Twenties. He talked about the flappers, and he talked about the silent film era. But he says there's one star. They always talk about Chaplin or Buster Keaton, but they never talk about Daredevil Brown. And he goes, you don't know Daredevil Brown? Well, it all started with a fishing trip. So, okay, now we understand why they're calling it a Gone Fishing. I don't know what the hell Daredevil Brown has to do with fishing or films, but I'm excited to find out. So our episode starts, of course, where it usually does. in 1991. Doc is working on a way to, I guess, make shoes that don't stink. Oh, no, waterproof sneakers. Meanwhile, Vern is all excited because there's a big mouth bass fish off. It's a father and son, the Hill Valley Big Mouth Bass Fish Off. He brings the sign to Emmett. He's all excited to go fishing with Pop. And Emmett freaks out. He's like, no, don't even ask me. I can never go fishing. No, 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 no. So he runs in the house and he's like, I don't want to go fishing ever. And he's like, what do you got there, Jules? He goes, oh, this is a way I can watch TV in the other room. It's this like, without bothering people, it's this big helmet with a long tube attached to it. And I guess that's his way of watching TV. Nowadays, you can literally put like a visor on and watch a movie. So it's kind of, it's virtual reality before Lawnmower Man. And before, what we see today. But it shows Doc fish, and Doc freaks out. And we're like, what's the problem? Why doesn't he want to go fishing? Because I think Jules is watching a fishing show. And so instead of talking to their dad, instead of asking him, they go into his room late one night. And, okay, I was getting nervous, but Clara is in the bed. She just has her head turned. She's sleeping on the other side of the bed. They don't wake her. They don't wake Emmett. They don't ask him. They don't talk to their father. Instead, they take this ear doohickey, shove it in his ear, and Jules figured out a way to allow them to see his inner thoughts while he's sleeping. My first thought is, that might not be a good idea. Like, what if he's thinking about that first night with Clara? You know, they look through the telescope, and then one thing leads to another. And Doc never came home. Remember, he was wearing the same thing the next day when Marty ran into him in the middle of the street. He was smelling the flowers. He loved life. What if he was thinking about that? And Jules and Vern happen to tap into that sultry, sultry night. But instead, it's almost like they're in his head in a dream. Even though they're just looking at a screen, we're seeing it like they're actually in his head. And they see some memory that they don't want anyone to see. But they chip away. They get to the memory and they see a young boy on the edge of a cliff fishing, and he falls in the water. And that's it. So he's like, oh, he must be traumatized because he fell underwater, saw all these fish. Very traumatizing. And I'm trying to think, did Doc own any fish in the 80s? Is there anything that would make this story seem far-fetched? I mean, they're all far-fetched, but no, I don't think so yet. So they're like, that's it. We know what to do. Let's steal the car, steal the DeLorean. Let's go back there and change that so it doesn't happen. So Dad's not afraid of fish. Now, that could catastrophically change everything. Like, what if he's not afraid of fish? He becomes a great fisherman. And during that time, he falls in love with the daughter of a rival fisherman. And it's a forbidden love, but it's love. And, they end up getting married, running away, having a family. Jules, Vern, Marty, none of it ever exists because Doc is so... You know, he finds his life, and his life is with a rod and a reel. And it's all because his own children changed everything and erased themselves from existence. Think about that. Think about if they go back and that changes things. I mean, Biff ends up with Lorraine, George McFly. Who knows what happens to him? He's a schlub. Nothing happens to him. He never even sends in like a something, you know, that he... to Sci-Fi Magazine for him to write, you know, submit a story, nothing. Just all because Dr. Emmett L. Brown got lucky one day at the fishing hole. So that doesn't happen, though. Don't worry, none of that happens. The kids end up stealing the DeLorean. They run into Marty, who's like, I just came by to get my hoverboard. I don't know why he's there at night to do that. That's a little suspect. We're almost through the whole season. We haven't met another McFly in the 90s. We've met future McFlys. We've met past McFlys. I want to see McFlys we already know. But nope. No McFlys. No Goldie Wilson. No no other supporting characters that we've seen in these movies. No Red the Bum. No the mayor. The other mayor. Was that Red Thomas? Marvin Berry. I mean, come on. Was Strickland in any... We might have had a Strickland, I think. I think we got a Strickland once. I know we did in the comics because the comics are doing better. But I don't know. Anyway, so Marty's like, you know what? I won't tell if you let me come along. So they all travel back to August 5th, the day after my birthday, 1926, 50 years. And one day before I was birthed into this world. I'll never forget that day. It was warm. Mother was pushing. Okay, I'm done. So we cut right to 1926, and we see a young Emmett just sitting there with his own fishing rod. And Marty and the kids walk up and like, what are you doing? He's like, how's it going? His voice is pretty funny, I'm not going to lie, because it's definitely Dan Castellaneta. They might just speed up his voice, or he just heightens it, but he's basically doing the same duck, but he just, like, it doesn't, it's not a little kid's voice. It's a higher pitch, younger attempt at Doc's actual voice. And it was kind of funny through this entire thing. So he's like, I want to go fishing with my crazy uncle, Oliver, but he's busy. And like, what's he busy doing? Oh, that. And they look up and he's sitting on a flagpole. He's this eccentric oddball uncle. Like, he looks like he should be yodeling. He wears shorts. He has a big giant orange mustache. He has a big hat with a feather in it. He's just kind of a goofball and he's doing this. And Marty's like, let me get his attention. Now, how does he get his attention? Does he take his hoverboard and fly up there? No, no, no. He jumps on the back of a car that has like a soft roof. And for some reason, the car acts like a trampoline and he bounces way up. Hey, you should take your nephew fishing. But can we take him fishing instead? And then he crashes into the car. He ruins the car. He should be dead. The car is ruined. The car should explode. But Uncle's like, yeah, you could take him fishing. So they take him fishing. He goes out on that ledge, and Jules like, hey, don't go on that ledge. Okay, problem solved. The show should be over. They should now go back because they came back to fix it. That's it. Walk away. Or spend like an hour fishing with him. I guess that's all they really wanted to do is take him fishing so he'd like fishing. But again, that could change way, way too much. Instead, Marty goes to the edge and he falls in the water, but he's fine. So everything's going to be fine, right? Let's try fishing. So Emmett goes to cast his first cast. I think he's just even practicing. He winds up. The line goes back. Meanwhile, a stunt biplane aeroplane is flying by. While he throws the line up, the aeroplane catches the line. It gets wrapped around him. This is happening. Now, if this was live action, it'd be bonkers. Even in a cartoon, it's a little silly. It grabs him, and he does not let his... My first thought is, let go of the rod. Why is he not letting go of the rod? He holds onto the rod and gets swept off his feet from the airplane, flying through the air. Marty and the boys are just watching him. He's getting pulled along at hundreds of feet in the air. He flies by his uncle. He's like, that's my nephew. Oh my goodness, we have to get him. So they run, they chase the airplane to a stunt show, the Boris von Hinkelhoffen's Flying Circus. They land and the crowd goes crazy. Someone is filming it and they're like, he's like, wow, I got a great shot of this. The plane lands. The plane has eyeballs for some reason, or they painted them on. And they're like, wow, that was crazy, kid. He had no idea what he was doing. He didn't mean to do it. And the guy who filmed is like, this is going to be a sweet picture. They bring him to this giant premiere. I mean, this thing has more people in it than like a Pearl Jam concert. And it is a giant screen. Vern pops a bubble and a guy goes, shh. And Jules is like, or Vern says, what's the problem? It's a silent movie. The uncle goes, what other kind can there be? Because of course, there's no such thing as a silent movie. It's just a movie. It's just talking pictures. And he goes, wait, is that Daredevil Brown? The Daredevil Brown? Because the movie got so, so much praise that this guy's like, I'm a Hollywood agent. I'm going to bring you to Hollywood and put you in movies. Sign here on the dotted line. The uncle doesn't even read the character. He literally signs it, oddball Uncle Oliver. And he's like, great, we're ready to go. But wait, how are we going to get to Hollywood? I have an idea. And they take the DeLorean. They take the flying DeLorean with a giant Zeppelin-like blimp sticking out of the top of it. Doc built a full-size blimp that fits in the DeLorean and can come out when it's needed, when they need to slowly fly across the nation. And young Emmett's like, this is brilliant. And Vern says, oh, why don't you brag about it a little more? Which I actually thought was kind of a clever line because, of course, future Emmett built this. But young Emmett is you know, admiring it. So we get an Indiana Jones map line from, it looks like, where did they go to? They were in Minneapolis, right? No, Milwaukee. They were in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And the red line brings it straight to Hollywood. If you haven't seen Mannequin, the film, Hollywood is the, he steals the show. So we cut right to what is actually one of Emmett's movies. He's hanging from he's washing a giant clock tower. He gets thrown from the clock. I don't know how he's doing this without stunts, but apparently he's doing this. Thrown from a clock tower, lands on an American flag, bounces off the American flag, bounces off some rooftops, and lands in a fountain. And then we get this giant end sign that looks like Porky Pig, you know, like the that's all. It says Daredevil Emmett, the end. It shows his head like popping out. He doesn't look too happy in the picture, but the people are going nuts. And that's when you get a montage of all kinds of Daredevil Brown stuff. I played that clip at the beginning of this episode. He's Daredevil Brown and he's in the news. Like he's on the cover of newspapers. There's comic books. There's toys. There's soup named after him. They're opening a can of soup with him like tied to railroad tracks. From soup to nuts. Then they have nuts with him hanging from a building. Like kids are trading sports cards, you know, baseball cards. He's being shot out of a cannon. He goes, "Do you think this is a good idea, Uncle Oliver?" He's like, "Of course, it's great." Meanwhile, the guy in the airplane goes, "I'm going to go fly around the world with my brother now." And I was like, is that supposed to be Lindbergh? I don't know. It shows him wrestling a bear. It shows this guy, this adult at a barbershop saying, "Give me the Emmett." And they give him a haircut like him while reading it. Not the Emmett. Give me the Daredevil Brown. While he's reading a Daredevil Brown comic book. We see a record doing the Daredevil Brown, ELB Records. It actually looks like a real record spinning. I kind of enjoyed this. Now we see they're in this giant mansion in Hollywood land. In the 1920s, it's a stretch limo. It's a huge house. They're hanging out in the pool. I don't know how long they've been there, but the fact that you can time travel like this and then just come back and not miss a thing is incredible. It's like Inception, except you do age. And it's really happening. So Oliver's counting all this money. The kids and Marty are in the pool. And Daredevil Brown just wants to go swimming. And he's like, no, you can't do that. And then he goes, I'll go in the house then. And Marty goes, do you think he's really enjoying himself? He's like, instead of being like this, he's fine, don't worry. He goes, you're probably right. Why don't we just stop doing this and go back home? But then he gets one final call to make a lot of money by going over a giant waterfall in a barrel. And finally, we run into the villain of this episode. They're like, what? Why do you want to go over? Like, whose dumb idea was this to go over a barrel? You'll be going at 200 something miles per hour. Whose bright idea was this? And we meet D.W. Tannen. Yep, there we finally get our biff of the episode. So he's like, don't worry, kid. It's all Hollywood. It's entertainment. See, you go in the barrel, then there's a hole in the barrel. You come out of the barrel, and inside we put a dummy. See, he had a little doll that looked just like him, and I don't know where. I think maybe Vern made the doll. I don't know because Vern all of a sudden had the doll. He goes, "This is exactly what you got to do. It's easy. Don't worry about it." Then he goes inside and talks to the cameraman. He's like, "Listen. There's no doll going in there. We have to make this look as realistic as possible. So you're not letting him out. Don't worry about that. He's staying in the barrel and he's staying for good, you see?" But for some reason that makes no sense, Marty, Emmett, and Vern were hiding in a tree watching this whole thing because, of course, there was a hole in the roof of the tent that they were able to look in. Why did they go there? That doesn't make any sense. That was never explained. It just kind of happened. They overheard them. It's like, you know, again, not great. But they're like, we need to come up with something, some way to get young Emmett out of this. So their big idea is to distract them with another like stunt. Marty, can you walk straight in a straight line? He's like, yeah, sure. Okay, great. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to tightrope across the waterfall. I'm sorry, what? But that's exactly what he starts doing. But don't worry. Jules has a plan, and it's using science to save things. He takes a piece of chewed gum, sticks it to the bottom of Marty's shoes, and therefore he will now be able to safely tightrope, right? I guess. it seems to work because he almost falls to his death a couple times, but the gum allows him to hold on. Now, while he's doing that, Jules has an actual plan. He takes Vern and knocks him in the head so that Vern... actually, does he knock him in the head? Or does he just accidentally drop a wrench on his head? But he takes his hat off. He goes, "You look just like Daredevil Brown. So here's what we're going to do." He has a barrel. He has a spare flux capacitor. He puts Vern in the barrel, risks Vern life, because at least Vern knows what to do with the time, with the time circuits and the flux capacitor. The young guy, the cameraman, doesn't know the difference. So he puts Vern into the barrel, thinking it's D.W. Brown. I mean, thinking it's Daredevil Brown. D.W. Tannen's like, "Here he goes in the barrel. Look, everyone, this is going to be the greatest thing ever." And then the uncle's like, "Goodbye, this is great." But the cameraman, the other guy, shows up with the dummy. And the uncle's like, "Wait a second. There's no dummy in the barrel? That's my actual nephew? How could you? How could you risk his life doing these things? Who would do such a thing?" And D.W.'s like, "Well, you did." And he's right, he did. So the uncle chases after the barrel and is about to go over the falls with the barrel. But Marty is tightrope walking with one of those long sticks that, like, you know, tightrope and high wire people walk with. And he uses the stick to catch Uncle Oliver by his coat. For some reason, it holds because it's a cartoon. But the barrel lets go and the barrel plummets down. But it goes so fast that it hits 88 miles per hour and disappears. Now everyone freaks out. And Uncle Oliver's like, "No, Emmett." Turn around, Emmett's like, "I'm right here, Uncle." And they're like, "Oh my goodness, you're alive, thank God." And D.W. Tan's like, "Great, now here's your contract for, you know, future stunts." Uncle's like, "No contract ever." He rips it up like he's the dad in the Goonies. "And there'll be no selling of the Goondocks ever." And he pushes D.W. Brown over into some water. And he's like, "You'll never work in this town ever again." They're like, "Great, that's good. We don't want to." They leave. They head back to their fishing hole by their house. It's Uncle, it's nephew Emmett, it's Jules, and it's Marty. And then Jules looks at his clock and goes, and they're fishing, and now Emmett loves fishing. Jules looks at his calculator. He goes, "If I calculate correctly, it should be right about..." And then boom, the barrel opens. The barrel finishes its descent when it was in the falls earlier. They actually put the location being right here and the time being right now. Time traveled to however many minutes or hours it was later. And boom, they land. Vern is alive. Everyone's saved. And I think, isn't Doc still... What? Wait a second. What if the Brown Mansion and the Brown Family Fortune all started right now? What if Uncle Oliver's riches from, you know, managing Daredevil Brown and hopefully putting some in a trust for young Emmett is what allowed them and allowed him to be rich? See, that money could have been used to fund many experiments, build many flux capacitors, and buy a DeLorean. So, I'm really digging this episode. So we flash forward back to 1991. The kids get to bed. They get home, get to bed. And not too long later, Doc wakes up. He's like, "Come on, everyone. Let's go fishing. We're going to the fishing hole because we love fishing." And so they did change the future. Doc doesn't remember anything about... he goes, "Oh, I'll tell you about the time I went for an airplane ride with a fishing pole." So he remembers that. He doesn't remember the fact that his sons were the ones with him. He doesn't remember those two boys, which I get. He just was with two boys, and if they never told him their name, but they should have been like, "Doc, Dad, do you remember those two kids? It was us. Ta-da!" And then time folds in on itself, and it's the end of the world. So we cut back to Doc. He's working on a satellite and a satellite dish. And then he's like, "Well, okay, let's come up with, I don't know, I love Isaac Newton and gravity." That's the science-y, teachy thing of today. He talks about Sir Isaac Newton. He talks about gravity. And he says two things, you know, matter the weight will fall at the exact same rate. We bring in Silence Bill Nye, the quiet guy, and he puts a bowling ball and an apple on the platform. They drop at the same time. They fall at the same time at the same rate because of gravity. Then Doc's like, see, and he holds the apple and he does it his own little experiment with the apple and a bowling ball, but he drops a bowling ball on his foot. The end. I don't know, guys. I like the use of the flux capacitor to get the barrel out of there. I loved the montage of the old, like, hey, everyone, we're doing the Daredevil Brown. I just think I enjoyed this episode. And I think 11 episodes in, we've hit the best episode so far. Will it be the best episode? Is it the best episode of the season even? I don't know. But, you know, not to spoil things completely, but this episode was pretty good. You know, yes, I like picking apart things because it's a cartoon. It's okay to be a little silly and a little, you know, nonsensical, and not everything needs to make, you know, have a logical reason for things happening. But at the same time, the story they told, the time travel side of it, and the execution, I thought was pretty good. So I'm going to give a thumbs up, I think, to this episode. And that's it. I'm done. I'm going to go now. I want to thank you for listening and thank you for watching. Da 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 da. What is that song? Da, na, 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 na. Oh, My Little Pony. I don't even know where that came from. So listen, folks, you know where you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Threads. I want to say Mastodon.social and Blue Sky at Geek Mentality. Just Google Geek Mentality. You'll find the socials. You'll find the YouTube. And you'll find the website, which is funsnotexperts.com. And if you're on YouTube, oh, the podcast is Geek Mentality. If you're on YouTube, Fans Not Experts, all one word, or just search Fans Not Experts. We make podcasts. So that's it. I'm done. 13 days down. And wait, I'm going to do the math. 18 days to go. Whew. All right, friends, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for subscribing. I'll see you in the future. But until then, here is my theme song.
This is my podcast. I made it. Geek Mentality is what I named it. And I think you should listen and subscribe. Because I'm kind of funny and awesome. I think that I'm worth your time. And I'm kind of handsome, my mom says. Please listen and please subscribe. At least listen to this episode.
Fans Not Experts.